Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. I apologize for the lateness. I did need to take care of a few administrative matters before we got started this evening. So, welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. Carnival number 9, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Board of Education agenda. This is a special meeting of the Board of Education. It's May 12th, 2011, and we're calling this meeting to order at 5:42. Do I have the right one? Yeah, okay. We'll start this evening's meeting with an invocation, and I'd like to do something slightly different this evening. I'd like to just start with a moment of silence so each one of us can prepare themselves in a manner which they're accustomed to, and from that then I will go in and lead the flag salute. So if you would, for a moment, please stand for a moment of silence. Thank you. Now, please join me in a salute to our flag. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Cottle.
Here.
Mrs. Miranda Jimenez.
Here.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Here.
Mrs. Polis.
Here.
Mr. Spence.
Here.
All right, this evening we actually do have two items that we're going to be discussing. We have first this special meeting dealing with the San Jose Charter Academy charter petition, and then later on this evening we will be going into closed session, and so I hope that you will all kind of bear with us as we go through the procedures that we need to go through in order to accomplish our agendas for tonight. So this evening we will start with a presentation from the San Jose Charter Academy charter petition. And who do I have? Denise Patton, please.
Good evening, board and guests. Tonight we are very proud to present our charter petition, and we would like to start the evening just with a special presentation for your viewing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
this time, I'd like to call up Mr. Simmons, who will continue with the presentation.
Good evening, President Cox, members of the board and community. Always a pleasure to be with you. I just had a few more slides that I just wanted to go over the substance of the material revision, you know, why we're asking for the material revision and, you know, specifically what we're hoping to accomplish in this next five-year period should you approve the material revision and the renewal as currently proposed. Just a second as it comes up on the screen.
Do you have out handouts for the board?
No.
But we can
certainly produce some. Yeah. So as San Jose Edison moves into its 14th year of operation this next year, obviously, as you can see from the slideshow previously with the academic performance, this school has had tremendous success academically with an API of 910 currently. It's had strong and stable internal leadership, obviously capable faculty, state and national recognitions. And because of all of that, we believe San Jose Edison has demonstrated its capacity to manage the school's operations. And going forward, what we're proposing is that the site-level leadership would take the primary lead role in managing the day-to-day operations of the school under the oversight of a 501c3 nonprofit board. And then that the charter school, in turn, would contract with Edison Learning directly for provision of educational services. The reasons for the material revision here are outlined, but, you know, essentially our thinking is that site-level decision-making ensures more timely response to stakeholder concerns. We want to continue our growth in student test scores, even in light of declining state revenues. As all of you know, we're facing a tremendous crisis in California of public education funding, and so it becomes a greater and greater challenge with less and less resources to do more and more, and that's a challenge we all face together. We want to preserve the quality instructional program and the experienced team that has achieved this API score of 910. And we want to shift away from process-based decision-making and operations and toward outcome-based management. And I want to enhance that just a little bit to let you know that when the Charter Schools Act was passed here in California, the theory behind it was that if we were to free groups of teachers and parents to start schools that were free from most of the requirements of the Education Code, most of the state regulations, and if we were to simply ask of them one thing, which was achievement on student test scores and later the API specifically, that that what we would have is a system where we would empower groups of parents and teachers to be creative and to focus on outcomes rather than so much on how we get there. And this school has demonstrated an API of 910, and what we want to do is take advantage of the promise that the legislature gave us, that if we achieved results, we'd be free from these statutes and regulations and from so much of the process-based thinking that envelops the traditional public school system. If the material revision is approved, the management of the school will be vested in a nonprofit board of community volunteers. The initial board is laid out in the charter petition. It would also simplify the dispute resolution process between the district and the charter school in the event of any disputes that occur in the future. It would essentially reduce it down to meet and confer between the charter school and the district, and we think that would result in faster and more efficient resolution of concerns. And throughout the charter petition, we have adopted best practices language. So this language, you will find, has been approved by school districts, county offices of education, and the State Board of Education. And so we have shifted this charter up to the current best practices language throughout the petition. And we did that because we, again, we're striving to be a school that doesn't rest at 910, but that continues to move forward and move upward and onward. And in so doing, we thought it was important to update the language and not rest on the language that had been approved so many years ago. Specifically with regard to classified staff, as you know, currently these folks are district employees. But if they made the decision to stay with the charter school, and we certainly hope they will, the charter petition grants them certain rights, assuming you approve this petition language. It would allow them to transfer all their unused sick and vacation days. It would allow them participation in PERS. It would allow them comparable health benefits package. And the if eligible is related to if you meet the certain number of hours of work required to be eligible to participate in health benefits. They would be able to transfer with their current salary that they're paid at the district. And these current employees would be grandfathered in terms of their vacation and years of service that they've accrued. The intent here also is to reorganize our administrative services so that we use experts in the area they're best at. So what do we mean by that? The charter school would retain a firm called Delta Managed Solutions, which is detailed in the charter petition, but they are a financial services firm that provides business services only to charter schools. That's all they do. They're very successful. All of their charter schools have had clean audits, and they've been around for many years. So we think that that's a real strength to be able to have somebody with in-state financial expertise that's specific to charter schools. Keeping Edison Learning for what we think they're best at, which is educational services. That's where they've been, has been their strength. And continuing to rely on the district for what we think the district is best positioned to provide, things like food services and things which the district has some economies of scale that we can benefit from, and we think the district does well. We have, however, proposed that, if in continuing to use district food services, that we would be entitled to, you know, the benefit of reimbursements that the district receives for food services. Right now, that has not been the case, and we think that's only fair that if the district is able to recapture some of its costs, that the district shouldn't charge us for something that someone else has already reimbursed you for. In the area of facilities, it would shift now to rent being paid. And I'll note that this rent that's been proposed in the agreement is, we did a survey of what you have been renting out other facilities in the district for, and it appeared that this was actually above what some of your other rents have been. And the facilities use agreement, we think, is very fair in terms of its allocation of responsibilities between the district and the charter school, particularly given the agreements you have already made with other private entities. It would, if you approved it, expand the square footage available to the entire school site, with the exception of the Los Angeles County Office of Ed and the special ed classrooms that are at the school site currently. Those would be still on the campus and maintained just as they are. Obviously, if this is done, it would essentially extend beyond June 30th what has already been discussed by the board and approved by the board in concept. We've included this new facilities use agreement in the charter petition itself so that you could review it and be aware, because we think it is integral to the comprehensive proposal that is being proposed. In order to implement these revisions, the district and Edison Learning must mutually agree to end the current management agreement with Edison Learning. That's because the agreement currently extends beyond July 1 of 2011. So it would require a mutual agreement. You saw contained in the charter petition revisions a letter from Laverne White on behalf of Edison Learning indicating that they are willing to do that, assuming that you approve the material revisions to the charter. So you already have an offer from Edison Learning to do just that, assuming you're prepared to accept it. And then, as I mentioned previously, the new charter contract would be replaced with a charter that would be with a contract, rather, that would be between Edison Learning and the charter school directly. That's the end of our presentation. Obviously, I think you had your counsel was going to make a presentation, but certainly available to answer questions anytime.
All right. As Mr. Simmons indicated, we have asked our attorneys from Lozano Smith to assist us in the process and evaluation of the charter position. And this evening we have with us Ed Sklar to share with us some the petition process and overview of the petition process.
Sure. Tonight I really just wanted to discuss the public hearing and the agendized public hearing, why we're here tonight, to discuss how it's contemplated in the scheme of reviewing this this charter petition for renewal and also for as a material amendment, to make material amendments to the charter petition. We the district received this charter petition on April 15th. So what the law contemplates is that there will be a public hearing held within 30 days of the submission. You're compliant with that by holding this public hearing here tonight. And then that the law also contemplates that the district board, this board, take action within 60 days of the submission of the petition to either affirm or deny the petition. We can discuss right tonight. For purposes of tonight, it was agendized as a potential action on the petition to either approve or deny it. That's at the district's discretion, and we can discuss those issues in a bit and as we move through this public hearing. What the law states is that the public hearing will be held on the provisions of the charter, at which time the governing board of the school district shall consider the level of support by teachers employed by the district, other employees of the district, and parents. This has been a pretty good process from what I've seen tonight. Generally, it's pretty informal, even though it is called a public hearing, but you will hear from the public in regard to their take on the charter school, the provisions within the petition, their request to be renewed and for 5 years, and the request to adopt the amendments that they've made to the petition and that Mr. Simmons has reviewed. Right now, that really is a simple review of the petition process. So I can take questions now. We can hear from the public. It's up to the board's discretion.
Do you want to talk about anything to the attorneys at all? Let's keep it to that. And not to the petition in itself.
Or in regard to process,
to the
any questions?
Where we're going. Any questions? No? Okay. With that, then, let's go into the public hearing portion. And a public hearing is hereby declared open at 6:07 p.m. for the purpose of hearing public input regarding the petition for renewal of the of and material amendment to San Jose Charter Academy, Charter Education Code 47605 and 47607. And it's kind of an unusual situation because we have a public hearing first, and then we'll also take items from the floor and public comment. So what I think I'll do, because I don't really have a definite between the two, I'm going to just go with the blue cards with respect to the public hearing, and then once I'm out of blue cards, then I'll close the public hearing, and then I will go and solicit items from the floor, public comment, just as anybody who wishes to make a comment. So this evening we have with us the district director representative from Assemblyman Roger Hernandez's office, Joaquin Castañeda.
Afternoon, committee members. Afternoon, President Cox, the board. My name is Joaquin Castañeda, district director for newly elected Assemblymember Roger Hernandez, and I'd be presenting this letter on his behalf. Dear West Covina Unified Board members and Superintendent, As a former board member of Roland Unified School District, I know firsthand the level of commitment the job requires and the good work you do on behalf of the community who elects you to serve. I also recognize that the administration, teachers, classified staff, parents, and the countless volunteers invest long days and sacrifice away from their loved ones to better the learning environment and the quality of education for all students in the district. Recently, the California Department of Education released the 2010-2011 base API scores for schools throughout California. And I am happy to announce that West Covina Unified was one of the top performing school districts in the region. This distinction is a result of a collective effort. One contributor to this collective achievement is San Jose Edison Academy. We can all agree that student achievement is our number one priority. So when a school succeeds, our community succeeds. With that in mind, I offer my support to every school in the district, but in particular, San Jose Edison Academy, as they seek approval for the petition for charter renewal and the opportunity for the continued success and student achievement. Again, congratulations to West Covina Unified School District for a stellar year of achievement. And if my district office can be of assistance, please feel free to contact my district director. Sincerely, Roger Hernandez, Assistant Majority Whip, Assembly Member for the 57th Assembly District. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Marina Magana, representing CSEA. Oh, there you are.
Good evening, members of the audience, school board. My name is Marina Magana. For those who don't know me yet, I represent CSEA. I'm the president of the Chapter 91 and close to 400 classified employees. And I just want to remind the district that if this proposal passes, that CSEA will demand to negotiate the effects of this change to the classified employees. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Arlene Lemus. Arlene Lemus? Huh? Lemus? Excuse me. All right.
Hi. My name is Arlene Lemus, and I am going to read a letter on behalf of Dr. Steve Fish. Dear West Covina Unified School District Board of Education and Cabinet, as a former superintendent of West Covina, I would like to offer my support to San Jose Edison Academy. I would have been more than happy to attend the meeting in person. However, I am now traveling and would like to instead offer my letter of support. During the 1997-98 school year, I was part of the decision-making process that brought Edison Learning to West Covina. Through much discussion and consideration, we opened the charter school in the fall of 1998. We had high hopes and high expectations for the new school, and I'm proud to say that San Jose Edison has exceeded all of them. The many awards and honors, along with their API and AYP results, are true indicators of this success. I am also very supportive of the charter school staff. The leadership has been outstanding for the past 13 years. In addition, the remarkable and dedicated staff who work at the charter school know that to be truly successful, you must be student-focused. The road to success for this charter school has not always been easy, and they have had many obstacles along the way. What has continued to baffle me is why many of these obstacles have been generated by the very district in which this school resides. Yet in spite of such adversity, the school has continued to succeed and offer a world-class education to students they serve. It is my hope that San Jose Edison Academy will be allowed to continue in the direction they are seeking. Sincerely, Dr. Steve Fish.
Aaron Shiroma.
Good afternoon. I'm reading a letter on behalf of Drexel Smith. Dear President Cox and members of the board, please accept this letter as testimony under the referenced public hearing as I am on travel and unable to attend the meeting in person. The recently published API score of 910 for the year 2010, along with the High California Schools comparative ranking of the San Jose Edison Academy, is testimony to the wonderful learning taking place, and I offer my heartiest congratulations to the board, Superintendent William Castillo, Principal Denise Patton, and the entire district leadership on this accomplishment. I am hopeful the district leadership will continue with this wonderful program of learning, and I offer my encouragement and support of its continuance. This year, your San Jose Edison Academy participated in the 48th Agriculture Nutrition Fair, where over 3,000 papers and projects competed and did very well, taking home several noteworthy awards. As I serve on the Agriculture Nutrition Fair Board, I took the opportunity to visit San Jose Edison Academy 2 weeks ago and toured the school with dynamic Principal Denise Patton. Over the past several years, I have visited many schools across the country as part of speaking about science education issues, and I must tell you, I was most impressed. In every room, there was real learning going on, visible by the work on the walls, the professional learning demeanor on the part of the teacher and students alike, and the overall positive energy was noticeable. I believe the API score is just one more example of the learning taking place at the school. As you know, for a number of years, I have been a speaker on the topic of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics education, and the impacts to our current and workforce of the future due to a lack of our students willing to study the quote-unquote hard stuff, giving keynote talks to industry, political, civic, and academia groups. From this experience and listening to all stakeholders, I have a high level of appreciation of the critical need for quality education. I believe San Jose Edison Academy sets a high standard of learning that all schools can aspire to and provides a solid base of learning that our children will benefit from throughout their careers. The issues of education are complex, with many points and counterpoints on each major issue, placing extraordinary demands on the leadership of all school districts. With the full recognition, finding productive pathways for continuance of this program is a daunting task. I am pleased to provide this letter of support and appreciation for the continuance of this outstanding academy, as well as my congratulations to the leadership of the district for a job well done. You and the Board of Trustees should be proud of the accomplishments of this program. Yours truly, Drexel Smith.
Matthew Smith.
Sorry about that. I was in the back. Good evening, school board. I'm here to speak on behalf of San Jose Edison Academy. I am Matthew Smith. I've shared before that I've done everything from instructional aid to interim assistant superintendent in different school districts, and I just want to say how impressed I am with San Jose Academy. I sit on their school site council, and it's just a very impressive school to be associated with. They collect their staff. They do goals for the year. There's teacher, grade level collaborations, and it all filters down to my kids who are in kindergarten and first grade, and it filters down to them for the instruction they get in their group of 20, and it filters down to the individualized care and tutoring they get on top of that. And as I've said, I've 20 years of experience in school districts, and this is by far the best school that I've ever been associated with. I have a couple of concerns regarding funding, Title I budget funding, and Microsoft settlement funding. I think there may be a perception that there aren't at-risk kids at a school that has a 910 API. That's not the case. We review test scores, benchmarks at every school site council meeting. A couple of meetings ago, we identified third grade math as needing improvement, voted for software to be ordered to help them to make a push before testing. And I just really expect that Title I funding and the Microsoft funding be distributed fairly among schools as they have been identified for students to help. Like I said, there's at-risk students at San Jose Academy also that could benefit from that funding. And lastly, I want to encourage the school board to take the direction that San Jose Academy is giving to them. This is a school that has an audited lottery system. It's not picked and choosed. It's not by a wealthy portion of the community that these kids live in. It's from an audited lottery, pull your name out of a hat system. And they've got a 910 EPI out of it. You know, they're not skimming. They're not creaming the top. They got a true 910 out of taking names out of a hat. Luckily, I had my kid name taken out of that hat, and I'm definitely thankful for that happening. It's a truly incredible blessing. But, you know, this staff has proven themselves. You saw PowerPoint tonight. You heard other comments. And, you know, I truly believe that, you need to take their recommendations and let them take this to the next level. They're at 9-10 right now. They've had a proven track record. And, you know, this is their recommendation. This is the recommendation on how to push the students even further and instruct and educate them even farther than they have before. And I really think that, you know, it needs to be considered greatly because of the success they've had. I'm locked in for 8 more years of living in West Covina because I'm not going to move. You know, this is, I could take my kids anywhere, but this is a $100,000 education. And, you know, I'm, thank you. So, I'm here. I've already talked to a 9th grader who's at the International Baccalaureate School, and I'm inquiring about that because that is the next step, and you should really be congratulated for taking that next step. What after 8th grade? What after your kids complete a 9-10 API ranked school, what are the next steps for those who want to continue to achieving at a high academic level? And I think it's great that you guys are providing that. So I'm even quizzing 9th graders over there. So thank you for the support you've given San Jose. We really expect that to continue. And, you know, lastly, trust the recommendation of the staff that's already proven themselves. Thank you.
Jeff Coronado. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is Jeff Coronado. Having a 6th grader and a kindergartner to be, I am a parent of not only the current generation of San Jose Edison students, but of the future generation. I have a vested interest in the well-being of the school now and for some time to come. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to watch the school's administration team, the staff, the school site council, of which I am a member, and the school's PTO provide and foster outstanding leadership and an outstanding environment for our children to learn in. The passion, the effectiveness of these people, whom I've had the privilege to witness and in some cases also work with, goes without question. I have complete faith that the leadership of our school is fully up to the challenge of managing the San Jose Charter Academy, and the current and future generations of students will be better served by granting the school's management be in the hands of the school's leadership. As a parent, I respectfully ask you to support the school's petition. Thank you.
Elizabeth Bradbury.
My name is Liz Bradbury, and I am a teacher and a parent at San Jose Edison. And I would first like to thank all members of the board for providing me the opportunity to speak this evening. My thoughts and feelings about San Jose Edison are twofold. I am not only a committed teacher at the school, but I am also a committed parent. I am committed every day when I come to work to make sure that the education that I provide to the children in my class meets the standards that are set forth by our charter. Those standards are demanding, time-consuming and lengthy, but I believe in the educational platform at San Jose Edison, which is why I choose to work there, and it is a choice. If I were to work anywhere else, I would have shorter days, fewer students in my class, less responsibility, and longer summer vacations. However, all of the previous mentioned items are insignificant when compared to the education that I am providing my students, coupled with the education that my children are getting. If I have to work harder and longer to believe in my work and be at San Jose Edison, I will. I started teaching at San Jose Edison upon its inception back in 1998. Dr. Patton took me in as a brand new teacher, yet she never treated me as incapable or inexperienced, which allowed me to excel. The Edison program has provided me with daily professional development that has groomed me into an effective teacher, leader, and curriculum mentor. I owe Dr. Patton, her leadership team, and this program a world of gratitude. I have also had the experience of teaching at another high-achieving school in this district. Although I enjoyed the time I spent there and created many lifelong friendships, my heart has always belonged to San Jose Edison. 3 years ago, I was lucky enough to begin enrolling my own children in this fine institution. And I can tell you that as a parent, I am so proud of what my children have accomplished. I know that every moment I am not with them, they are being cared for, nurtured, and instructed in the best way possible. The length that Edison teachers go to for students gives me a feeling of comfort that cannot be expressed in words. Having a child recently diagnosed with a learning disability was quite intimidating. However, with the support that she has already received, I am confident she will grow and develop academically. I'm not saying that these things wouldn't happen at any other school, but I see these things occurring daily at San Jose Edison. In closing, I would like to identify that I feel a major degree of separation and alienation as a teacher working at San Jose Edison. I am not sure how this happened, why this happened, or if it will continue to happen. What I am sure of is that we are not supported in the way that we deserve to be supported. We in the West Covina Unified School District are a team. We are a team that is comprised of individuals that have all made a choice to work in the district in some way or another. Let's not forget that we all share a common goal. Whether you teach at San Jose Edison or any one of the great schools in the district, we are all here to educate the children in our community. Whether there is synergy or separation between the school and teaching curriculum is irrelevant. What matters is that we all get the results that the children deserve. Without equivocation, San Jose Edison gets results and educates its students to the highest standard. With or without support, we will continue to do our jobs, but it would be wonderful to feel appreciated and supported by the entire district. Thank you.
My name is Donna Hale, and I'm reading a letter from the California State Senator Bob Huff. Dear West Covina Unified School District, Board of Education, and District staff, in learning that the public hearing for San Jose Edison charter petition was set for May 12th, I wanted to offer a few words. I would have preferred to be there in person, however, my schedule did not permit me to do so. As a senator in the state of California who has championed education, I am always thrilled to learn of a school that has shown tremendous success. We should be proud of this school representing our state as a national blue ribbon school and a California Distinguished School. In addition, we should be proud of how San Jose Edison has served as a model school for this district and this community. I am always interested in schools that show significant improvement, and I try to encourage other schools to duplicate the same process. San Jose Edison's academic record is truly impressive. The school has gained more than 272 points on the state API, and in 1999, the API was 638. Last year, it was 910. Additionally, San Jose Edison started as a school with 71% of the students reading below grade level in 1998. Today, the school has close to 80% of the students proficient in English language arts and math. The success of San Jose Edison is evident by the number of students on the waiting list. West Covina Unified School District is to be commended for having this very distinguished school. Sincerely, Bob Huff, 29th Senate District.
Thank you. With that, that represents the last of the written requests to speak. And so as a result, then I'm going to close this public hearing at 6:30 p.m. and then open to go to item number 5, items from the floor, public comment, to open it to anybody else who would like to speak to the issue of the San Jose Edison Academy charter. Are you waving and asking to speak, or are you waving to just say hello? Okay. Sir, come on.
Good afternoon. I didn't expect to be here today. I had a previous engagement that I felt that I had to move aside to do this, but...
I'm sorry, your name, please?
I'm Danny. My name is Danny Wu. I am a junior academy teacher at San Jose Edison. I teach 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And let me start with where I came from. I came from an immigrant family that didn't really, with my mom, who didn't really understand what education was, and we kind of fought our way through living in America. And I didn't speak English, had no idea what was going on. So I saw the kind of support or lack of support that I got when I was a kid trying to learn English and so on. Decided I was going to be a teacher, looking at how my school, what my school didn't do for me. That's the best way to learn for me, is to see adults' mistakes. So I went to school, did everything I could, went to UCLA, had a chance for a doctorate program at UCLA, but decided to stick with teaching. Taught in South Central LA by choice because I wanted to see how it was, why our education system was failing. And what I saw was, I saw a lack of leadership. We had so much money in our Title I program when I was in South Central LA. I mean, I was the only one using it. I took my kids to field trips every single, like, once a month at least. Bought 1 million frogs for us to dissect. Did everything under my power to do whatever I could to run the science program there, being a first-year teacher. Stayed there for 3 years, and my friend Krista Cabrera ran into me one day and said, "Hey, why don't you come over?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" So I went, interviewed with Dr. Pan, and had Miss Lemus, Arlene Lemus, pretty much laugh at me for what was going on at my school, because no one could believe what was going on at my old school. That being said, at UCLA when I was studying, we studied all of the cutting edge theories on how to run a school, and I never thought I'd see it in practice until I came here. And I wasn't supposed to stay here that long. Was supposed to be here for 2-3 years, and in the slide where it says that San Jose Edison is a family, it truly is, because I promised parents that I would stay here for their kids. And I keep making those promises, so I'm not going anywhere. But that's the heart of the San Jose Edison teacher. That's what we are. We are, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I have an idea what's going on here. I have an idea that our leader, Dr. Panton, I have an idea what she's going through, but I really don't, because she shields us from all this. She makes sure that we do our jobs, and she makes sure that she keeps us away from anything that distracts us from what we're called to do. And that's what our San Jose teacher is. We feel like this is our calling. We don't do it for money. I told Denise all the time, I do it for free. She won't let me. And I feel a sense of gratitude. And you know, and what's going on here today kind of reminds me of what my favorite mentor, Coach Wooden, used to say is not to worry about. One of his favorite maxims is don't ever worry about who's right, but just do what's right. And I hope that we're allowed to do what we're called to do. And I hope we do the right thing. Thank you very much.
Anybody else like to speak on this item? Tony Song.
This one back there.
Good evening. My name is Tony Song. Thank you for having us speak for you guys. First of all, I want to say thank you to Denise Patton, Dr. Patton. She gave me the opportunity to be part of the new formed board for San Jose Edison. And I wanted to come up here to let you know that if this goes through, that you at least have a face of one of the board members on the board. That you know if there's anything that's going to happen, there's somebody there for you to talk to, whatever we have to do. To give you a little bit of a background of what I do, I sit on three other boards. I sit on East Valley Community Health Center's board, as well as the Tenet Foundation board, which is a charitable giving board. and there's one more. Oh, of course, the Rotary board. How could I forget that? The Rotary board. So the reason why I wanted to mention what boards I'm on is because I have a very limited amount of time in my day. And I also run a business as well. And I have a family as well. And two kids go to San Jose Edison. So as you can see, I don't have very much time. But I am willing to give up my time because I know this is the right thing to do. And so I just wanted to come up here and let you know that the board of San Jose Edison, or the newly formed San Jose Edison, is here to work with you to make sure that that we do things right and that that we go forward with this this newly formed San Jose Edison. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Anybody else? All right. With that, we will then move to our business session to discuss the San Jose Edison Academy charter petition. And answer any questions that the board may have in the review of the petition and as such. So, or do you have anything else to add or add more? No? Yes, no, maybe? Okay.
No, I could take board questions if there's questions coming from the board.
All right. You want to go first?
Okay.
All right. Mrs. Polis?
The first question I have is you talked about having to do, we all have to do more with less now, and that your passage would be 1% of the revenues and that you would pay rent.
I think what we can do, and if it's okay with council, if you want to field these questions, maybe some of these questions would be more appropriate if they wanted to take from San Jose Edison.
Okay. That's significantly less than we're getting now. Can you explain how I can justify that to the other schools in our district who are also having to do much more with less money?
So I'm not sure I would agree with the base assumption that it's much less, because the charter school is giving you the 1% supervision and oversight fee. Currently, it's paying 3%, but no rent.
Right.
Now it will pay 1%, but will pay rent.
It looks like about $1 million to me, maybe a little more. Is that incorrect?
$1 million.
Then we would be less. We'd be getting $1 million less. Is that correct?
Dr. Patton, I don't think it's anywhere close to that number.
Okay. Can you give me a solid number then?
It would depend on the buybacks. Depending on the buybacks, it could be less than $100,000.
Well,
what she's talking about is essentially the services that the charter school buys from the district central office is another way in which San Jose Edison is giving money to the district in addition to the oversight fee, in addition to the rent.
I would like some more clarification on that. I would like someone to run the numbers for me so I could actually see that, because when I was trying to run them, it looked like $1 million. I didn't take in buybacks. I don't know how they were calculated in the past. But I would like to see that so I could justify that to the other schools.
We'd be happy to work with your staff on that.
I appreciate that. Under the new permit petition, it looks like San Jose Edison may be able to sublease the property or do what they would like with those buildings when they weren't using it. Is that correct?
Well, the intent is to, as you know, the school districts in the state of California, as well as charter schools, are obligated to comply with the Civic Center Act, which allows community groups, you know, such as Boy Scouts and 4-H and others, to come to utilize facilities. And there are certain charges that are permitted to, you know, cover the actual cost of use of the facilities, for example, janitorial, you know, services. So to the extent that San Jose Edison Academy is in charge of those facilities, San Jose Edison Academy is also obligated to provide those facilities as a community resource because they are owned by the taxpayers. They're not owned by the charter school. So, so yes, I guess to a limited extent, the answer is yes, that they would have an obligation to provide those services, those facilities, at the same charges that the district would provide them to community groups.
But at this time, the district can handle that. There is no reason for San Jose Edison to have to sublease it because the district would do that just like we would for all of our other districts where there's baseball, soccer, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. We try to open it up our schools to the community. And we're doing that now, so I'm not sure why there's the need for that change.
It's a much more responsive system that most charter schools use around the state because if someone comes to the district office and they file, typically there's a form that one fills out and requests facilities. The difficulty is that the school district official who receives that form is typically not aware of when a particular room or facility at the campus is being used for some other educational use. And educational uses take priority, as you know, over community uses of the facility. So this is really meant to simply streamline the process such that community members can come directly to the charter school, who's very much aware of the scheduling of all of the facilities and the use of all of the individual classrooms at the campus, and can just simply say yes, rather than the person going to the district person then calling the charter school, waiting for the charter school to research it and get back to the district person, then the district person getting back to the community group. It really is intended as a service to the district, frankly, because it takes you out of the middle and needing to spend money on having an administrator or some other person at the district office provide that. So it's really intended as a savings to the district.
But we still have a liability. And if the wear and tear on the facilities, let's say the air conditioning, the heating, we're still responsible to replace those things. So we'd also have to realize how much wear and tear is on the facility when it's being used. So it seems like it needs to be more of a partnership. And I would like to hear from our attorneys how they feel about that. And I don't know if this is the appropriate time.
Yeah, let's just go back and forth. Let's just, the best that we can, so we can just go through this methodically.
Sure. The administration of the Civic Center Act is one of the issues that I would want to discuss in the current version of the of the proposed facilities use agreement that was submitted with the petition. I agree with Mr. Simmons. There are districts that provide that to the charter schools to deal with, but I do work with districts that they are the ones who administer the Civic Center Act, receive the fees, and you're right, assure that there is assurances and indemnity. I think that there are certain provisions in the proposed facilities use agreement, if this will help save time, that do need to be discussed at the between the parties in regard to the negotiation of that agreement.
Okay, so then I'd appreciate some more discussion between the two parties on that issue. The next question. When we approve the extra use for the classrooms, buildings E and F, for the remainder of this school year, I thought we were going to have a thorough discussion on the building use. Will there be a more thorough discussion about those particular buildings, or are we going to look at it as the whole campus? Because it was presented here as part of the proposal, but we never had the discussion on those two buildings that I thought was going to come up at the end of the school year.
From my perspective, there has been actually a pretty lengthy discussion between counsel for the district and our office on behalf of San Jose Edison relative to the use of the facilities, and a rather lengthy negotiation back and forth over the use of those facilities on a temporary basis through June 30. So what we're suggesting essentially is that that use would continue effective on July 1st under the terms of the facility's use agreement. There was a discussion, as you're aware, earlier that that the longer-term use of the facilities would be, there was a desire by at least some members of this board that the longer-term use of the facility would be governed by a facilities use agreement. And that's precisely why we proposed a full facilities use agreement rather than an abbreviated document that was negotiated for purposes of between now and June 30. So that was our attempt to, you know, kickstart that discussion about such a specific and more detailed agreement.
Okay. I don't dispute that. I think that we should have a comprehensive facilities use agreement instead of it subdivided up, for lack of a better word. There are some, I don't know if I want a facilities use agreement integrated into the charter petition itself. That's something for discussion. But I do agree that we should have
a comprehensive
facilities use agreement.
But then in that comprehensive agreement, a more extensive talk about just those two buildings. And, I mean, is the rent they're proposing fair of all of that? Because we could rent those buildings out was another, two of those classrooms were proposed as maybe renting those two classrooms out. That would be additional income for the district. Is the rent they're proposing enough to cover, you know?
Sure. I have.
I'm sorry, I didn't articulate that well.
No, there are districts that are struggling in regard to the concept of negotiating reaching its Prop 39 obligations, which is to provide facilities for all of its in-district students. Those districts that reside reside within the district that attend a charter school, providing those students with the facilities and the obligations, and as you said, in these tough times, to try and maximize revenues in regard to using its facilities. So that is something that needs to be discussed. I think that one of the other issues that I would want to discuss in regard to the currently proposed facilities use agreement is the $1.45 per square foot that's charged, and that's something that would probably be discussed amongst ourselves as opposed to negotiated here.
Okay.
Thank you, and thank you for articulating that well for me. Does there need to be more clarification in our agreement about the LICO and West Covina Unified School District special education buildings, or is it clarified enough in here that those are going to be their buildings?
You know, I would have to look exact. Just refer to that language specifically, and that
okay.
would be something I could take a look at.
Okay, thank you. Has a complete review and analysis of the employees' rights and benefits been completed? According to the letter we received from you, that you are in the process of doing the review.
I have a question about that letter.
Confidential. So.
I mean, I don't know how we're.
Okay, so I won't mention that.
All right. Wait, just a second. I do want to address that right now with Trevin, if you wouldn't
okay.
mind.
So
you've delivered to us
yeah.
an attorney-client communication
yeah,
privilege and confidential.
That? So how do we do that?
Can we make reference to that? How would you like to?
Yeah, I mean, the document itself is attorney-client, so it is protected and privileged and can't be distributed outside the board. But the purpose of the letter is to advise the board of our preliminary assessment so that you can have an informed discussion about the petition and some of the issues around it. You know, what I would say is, essentially, we punted on the issue of how the employees are impacted as a result of the petition.
Before going to that specifically, I'm talking about, can we make reference to this letter this evening and discuss the items
the
that you brought up?
In the past, we have to do a vote.
Huh?
In the past,
well, just a minute. I'll get to that. So. Do you see what I'm getting at? Is this something that we need to take an action on to clear the client so that we can use this and your recommendations here as a basis for questions going forward?
I would say with respect to factual issues that are discussed. So, for example, I'm not clear about what the petition provides in this area.
There's a question about like the scope of the facilities. That's a factual issue. That's something you can certainly ask us about without waiving anything that's confidential in the letter. If you want to talk about our opinion on a
right.
disputed legal point of some sort, you know, then it becomes more of a question. But you know, for example, I think one of the issues that has come up is the process for the submission of the petition. And I have had a conversation with counsel about whether or not certain items were required in that process. And I've advised the board on that. But the factual issue of what was supported with the petition, provided with the petition, that's not confidential. Our analysis of that in the letter, I would say, is probably a confidential aspect that without the board's waiver of that privilege, I would not discuss that analysis. Does that make sense?
Okay. All right, so we can talk about some of the factual issues, but not necessarily
yeah. Yeah.
some of the opinions and conclusions that
yeah.
you've drawn.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ken. I'm sorry.
Does there need to be more clarification on the responsibility of Edison with 504 and IDEA? The individuals with educational
aid. I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Does there need to be more clarification on the responsibility in the petition for Section 504 and IDEA?
I'd like to see that because my understanding of my recollection of what it states in the proposed charter petition is that the charter school has been its own LEA, which would mean, for purposes of special education, which would mean it's its own member of ASELPA since 2008-2009. I don't know if that's the case, and so I would want to look at that. If it has been, then there may be sufficient discussion within the petition. If it is not its own LEA, then I would want to see a more elaborate discussion and terms integrated into the operational MOU I'd like to see in regard to the district's obligations on special education. Because if so, I maybe someone from SGAA can provide a clarification as to whether they are in fact their own LEA for purposes of special education. In regard to Section 504, I would expect that they are responsible for their 504 program.
So if I can just say, for the record, Jerry Simmons, counsel for SGAA, yes, the charter school is an independent LEA and has joined ASELPA.
Is there adequate insurance? Before, they were backed by a larger corporation, so if anything happened, they had that backing. So if they were sued for any reason, that they were backed by a larger corporation. Do they have adequate insurance to cover anything that could happen?
I'd want to discuss that with the district's risk management people. I don't have a conclusion on that yet.
Okay. This is an easy one. Is the executive director the principal? Or are they the same, overlapping?
Yes, is the answer to your question. Yes, it is one and the same.
I was assuming, but you never want to assume. let's see. There seems to be a discrepancy about the sheltered instruction for the English language learner program. Is there sheltered instruction, or is there no sheltered instruction? There is. Because it was in one place it said there wasn't, in one place it said there was on the. I'll point that out. And will Edison be able to do the full scope of special education services for all students, regardless of what their IEP says? So let's say somebody comes in and they have a special day class. are that they need an interpreter because they're deaf and hard of hearing. Are all of those services, are they going to be made available at the campus?
So the school is required as an independent LEA member of the SELPA to comply with all the SELPA policies and procedures. And so one of the requirements within every SELPA is that a full continuum of services be offered to special education students who are appropriately identified. So the question, though, of whether it will always be at the campus, I don't think the answer to that could ever possibly be yes, any more than with you, because, for example, you do have private school placements, for example, which by definition would not be done at the school district site or at the charter school site.
Is there a special day class there?
There's currently not a need for a special day class.
And if there was need for a special day class, what I'm hearing is there would be then?
Yes.
I have a question about Title I, but I think I'm going to hold off on that. And then dispute resolution was mentioned, and the district still has oversight of the district, of the school, but why should the district not be involved with dispute resolution when we have oversight responsibilities?
So let me just try and bring clarity to that. So the statute requires that the petitioners propose, as part of the petition, language about how disputes between the school district and the charter school shall be resolved. And so we have done that. The next question is the district involved in every dispute that any parent, any complaint, say, that a parent should come? If a parent shows up in Dr. Patton's office and says, I have a concern, I think my student's grade should be higher, you know, they got a B minus and I think they've deserved a B. I think the issue is that's a site level decision for an independent charter school because they're not governed by the district's policies and procedures on how to resolve that. They're governed by the charter school's policies and procedures when they're an independent charter school. So the intent is of this language is to allow you to have a clear process for how you resolve disputes between the charter school and the district, for example, about interpretation of the charter language or interpretation of the facilities use agreement. But the intent is not that you would be involved in the day-to-day operations of the school in the way that you would one of your own school sites, because this would not be a school that is managed directly by the district superintendent.
If I could just add to that, I think the only concern that the district would have, Mr. Simmons is absolutely correct, we don't want to be involved in the day-to-day management of the charter school. If there is an issue, though, an issue that begins a dispute between a parent and the school, such as my student was expelled and wasn't provided due process as laid out in the charter or in the student handbook as to how to discipline students, or we find that there has been, and I'm not saying it's happening here, but I'm saying I'm certainly not, but I've seen it happen in other charters, students are being what we call counseled out, which is this isn't the appropriate program for you, we want you to go back to the district. That to me is an expulsion. If that issue is going on, the district is not involved in the day-to-day process or the day-to-day management of the charter school, but the district is making sure and has the obligation to make sure that the charter school is complying not only with the charter to state how it will discipline students or expel students, but also in compliance with the law to make sure the students who are being expelled are being provided due process. That's the type of scenario where if there is a situation that arises between the charter school and a parent, an internal dispute, so to speak, the district would probably want to know if there is a larger picture there.
And so it sounds like there'll be more communication between council on that?
Okay.
Sure. And I guess I would just say also to address the concern in a more immediate way, we certainly would have no objection to the district exercising its supervision and oversight role in the Charter Schools Act, which is to ensure that the charter school is always in compliance with both the charter and with state and federal law. And so I certainly agree with your counsel on that point. And I guess the distinction, just so that you're aware why that language you don't see specifically referenced there in the dispute resolution section, is that from our perspective, we don't see that as a dispute between the charter and the district. If you're exercising your appropriate supervision and oversight responsibility, that isn't a dispute with the charter that follows the dispute resolution process. There's a separate notice to cure that you would provide, and we have a reasonable opportunity to cure that. You're required to conduct certain public hearings, all outlined in Education Code Section 47607. And so I guess, so I think we're actually in agreement on this point.
I appreciate that. Now if I could read it that way, I'd love it. Okay, how many classified staff are we talking about that are at San Jose Edison Academy now?
Nine.
Has there been a survey on how they feel about this change? No? Okay. And then Marina was talking about it would have to be negotiated. Can council please talk to me about what that would look like, and is there an obligation to have that negotiated? Our CSE rep, I'm sorry.
Where's that?
I don't know. It would be an issue I'd have to look into. One of the issues that was raised in the PowerPoint I would want to look into is there was a discussion about who's transfer and the transfer will – there will be a transfer of vacation and sick time. That – I didn't pick up on that in regard to the review of the petition, and that is something I would like to discuss because I'm not sure if there's some district obligation there. When we're talking about the transfer, who's paying for that? But I couldn't answer you in regard to whether that's a negotiable issue.
Well, for the record, we're not anticipating that the district would pick up costs of transfers of sick and vacation time. What we're assuming here is that employees who have accrued that time would have the right to use that time at the charter school, just as if they had stayed at the district and wanted to use that time at the district. There's a very similar process that is recognized in state law for employees transferring from one school district to another. Their sick and vacation time carries from one school district to another. And so it's just simply recognizing that similar sort of procedure here so that any employee who should decide to choose to stay with the charter school is not in any way disadvantaged by their decision to do that.
I'd appreciate more dialogue on that and an update on that. What would happen if we don't mutually agree to the current or to the new management agreement? Would Edison Learning, Inc. continue to run the school as they are right now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We have a contract.
Those are my questions.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that question again?
What would happen if we don't mutually agree to the new contract? Would Edison Learning, Inc. continue to run the school as they currently do? And his answer was yes.
Yeah, there's a contract. Yeah.
Wait, I didn't know if they were going to be trying to back out of that. I wasn't sure what the status of that was. I appreciate that. That ends my questions.
Yes. Ms. Miranda Jimenez, please.
Thank you. Seeing that we're going from a dependent charter to an independent charter, what are our specific obligations at this point for that 1% oversight? So as a district, it's going to change. We have quite a bit of oversight now. What are we legally bound to in terms of oversight?
Sure. The statute, what the Charter Schools Act contemplates is that there are certain statutorily obligations as the overseer, as the chartering authorizer, if you have a district or a charter school that's operated by a nonprofit public benefit corporation, as contemplated here. One is that you have a site visit at least once a year. Another is that you appoint a district contact. Another is that you make sure that all reporting and all financial reporting is done in accordance with the law. Another is, those are very specific acts that are pretty simple. Then what the law contemplates what the charter school contemplates is that a district will not be responsible for the omissions and liabilities of a charter school that it has authorized that is operated by a nonprofit public benefit corporation if it meets those statutorily obligated responsibilities and any other responsibilities. Now, the law has done a very poor job, I think, in laying out what the universe of obligations are for school districts as the chartering authorizer. I think that but what I tell districts is you're responsible for overseeing their fiscal condition. That's not being involved in the day-to-day management or business of the charter school, but it is making sure that their fiscal house is in order and that they're operating in the black. You are obligated to make sure that they are in compliance with their charter and that they are in compliance with the law. Now, how you go about doing that and the effectiveness is not laid out in the law, and every district has every district out there has some processes in place to make sure that their charters that they have authorized are compliant with the law and compliant with the charter, and some have weaker systems, I'll call that. But that is basically how I would describe it. There are certain very simple statutory obligations, and then you need to make sure they're in compliance with the charter, make sure they're in compliance with the law.
I have some questions in terms of the parents. The public is always concerned about how is it going to change for me or my student. So what material changes are going to take place or not any changes take place that the parents or public will visibly see?
I don't think that there would be any significant changes that the parents would experience as parents at the school, per se, except that, you know, I think one positive change is that this charter school would have its own board of directors, which they could go directly to. And because that board of directors is solely responsible for the operations of the charter school, rather than, in your case, you're responsible for the whole school district. So you have a lot of different things on your plate, and you have to divvy up your time amongst all the various schools and functions and whatnot. But this board will only be responsible for operating this one single school. And so I think, as a result, they're going to have a very, very deep level of knowledge of the internal operations of this school. And I think it allows them also to be very responsive to the concerns of all stakeholders, parents among them. But in terms of the educational program, there's no proposed change to the educational program of the school. So in terms of what students will experience in the classroom, they shouldn't see a change. It's the same great teachers. It's the same great program.
Okay. My same is the question for the teachers. What material changes, or maybe there will be none, of the teachers with this new charter petition?
Again, I would say we anticipate no changes that they should see, other than the fact that, again, there'll be a local board that is responsible solely for governing the charter school, which I think is very accessible to them, you know. So, and again, because all they're responsible for doing is managing this one school, I think they're going to have a really deep knowledge about what's going on at the school, and that will probably enable teachers to have greater influence, honestly, over the decisions about what happens at the school site on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. The public doesn't have the benefit of this great binder, so how often will the board meet, and will the public have access to see board meetings and make comments?
So the board is subject to the Brown Act, which is the state's open meeting law, just as you are. And so members of the public would always be welcome at the board meetings of the charter school. And they're also subject to the Public Records Act, so any records of the charter school are subject to review by members of the public at any time. And members of the public can, of course, come and comment at the board meetings, just as they have with you tonight. This is a perfect example of the open meeting law in action. So all of that would be afforded at the charter school board as well.
Okay. And then for the classified staff, I know that we could potentially be losing 9 classified staff. And currently they have a union, and the union is very specific about what the job is. So will the jobs be changing at all once they come over to the charter school? They're going to be asked to be doing things above and beyond, or very similar to what they're currently doing?
The goal is to have it be very similar to what they're currently doing. Again, you know, we think that these are great employees doing great work. They're part of the team that has made this school successful. We hope and want them all to come and to stay at the charter school. We hope that's the decision that they'll make, because we think it's good that we have employees who have been long-term employees working at that site who know the site's operations inside and out. It would be a huge loss to, you know, have to lose one of those people and replace them and retrain them. So, you know, so from our perspective, we want to hold on to those good employees.
Okay, good. And if we, with the charter school, we talked about a partnership. Would the charter school be open? I know that the staff would train and do conferences across the nation. Would they be open to doing that with our employees here within the district, now that they're going to be their own charter? Would they be open to that?
So, Dr. Patton, I think you'll have to answer that question. That was one I'm not.
We've always been open.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Okay. I have several questions. Most of them will probably be questions that you will have to look into the district's council and get back to us. But I do have some comments as to the presentation and some of the statements. You mentioned rent and looking at comparables around our school district. I think the only comparables you can look at when it comes to setting a rate would be Del Norte, which is where our RP program is, and Cortez, which is where LACO is. Both of those use the entire facilities. Both of them are charged and pay rent substantially higher than what you are asking to pay. The last time I looked at the rental rates on those campuses, one was approximately $6 and one was approximately $8. And you're requesting to pay $1.50 a square foot for that site. So before I would be in favor of a petition that changes the rate structure, I would ask Edison to very seriously look at the numbers of the other school and be reasonable, especially when the district will retain the responsibility of all the major improvements on that site, like air conditioning, heating. 1% and one percent oversight and 150 a square foot will not cover the district's ongoing cost. And I refuse to have the students of the other schools' funds go to maintain a campus for Edison. This other schools pay out of their ADA, their funds for their sites. I expect Edison to do the same. That simple. The classified, I appreciate that Edison wants the classified members to stay as part of their campus. I'm sure there are many who will want to, but my question is, classified members now are members of the school district, therefore they are union employees. So by staying with Edison, they would be losing their union rights, correct?
They would no longer be members of the district's classified bargaining unit. However, once a charter school is the exclusive employer for collective bargaining purposes, employees at the school site always have the right, if they choose to form a unit and negotiate with the charter school directly for salary and benefits.
The same the teachers do also, because that has been a complaint in the past that has come to the community that any attempt to unionize has been strongly quashed. And I don't know if that's true or not, but the classified will lose their union membership and not be part of a union at Edison at this point.
They would not be part of the union membership, but I think what's critical, though, is this is a very unusual offer by this charter school to recognize the current rights and benefits of these classified employees. Typically, charter schools in the state of California do not allow vacation transfers and sick pay transfers and those sorts of things. So this is a very unusual offer that is being made specifically because the classified staff has requested these kinds of things of Edison. And so these things were incorporated in the charter petition to reflect comments that they made and feedback they provided.
So they have been polled then?
They have not been surveyed, but people have talked to leadership of the school site and shared their concerns.
Okay. Civic Center Act was already addressed. A couple of the things I noticed. Some have been addressed in here, and it requires that parents fulfill a minimum of 5 hours per school year. Obviously, I have no problem with people volunteering. As a charter school, are you allowed to require that parents participate in certain events? And then also, are you allowed to have a student-parent contract that has those?
May I have order, please? We are. We'll take a break.